Good day again. This is really nice to have changed the position of the room. I don't know why we changed it over there at some point. I like this position. It's also really nice to be sitting here with all of you, of course. On this very particular day for the Portuguese nation, for the Portuguese people, wherever they are in the world, because there are a lot of Portuguese people who don't live in Portugal. And also for Europe, you know, it changed. It was an important moment for Europe as well. And for us, so Liberation Day. I don't know if you actually call it that in Portuguese, but do you call it that? No? You say this is the day of liberation or something?
Freedom.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's our path, right? The path of liberation. And last year when I was here, I know that I really delved into that and talked about how this practice is really radical, because it means waking up and then waking up that rebel mind that refuses, that resists the status quo. Like the Portuguese people rose up and resisted the status quo of the dictatorship. And we do that within ourselves. We wake up and we overthrow the tyranny of this self that we're identified with, that limits us, that keeps us from seeing who we truly are and seeing the world as it truly is, right? So this is, you know, the path, our path of liberation mirrors the path of the Portuguese people's liberation, or any people's liberation. At the moment, we have many different places where we hope that people will become free. You know, we can say maybe all of us, can we not only become free of the tyranny of our governments and the oligarchy, but can we become free within ourselves? Recently, I was in my office. I had just finished online dokusans with people, and literally, as soon as I closed the window, the doorbell rang. And so I opened instead of going around to my door, it's easier for me if I open the windows and I can look out into the street and see the people who are there, because I'm on the level of the street. And there were these two people standing there, and I thought they were probably real estate agents, because this happens all the time in my neighborhood. It's a very desirable neighborhood now, and so the real estate agents come all the time and say, would you like to have your house appraised, or are you interested in selling your house? And I always say, no, thanks. And so I thought that's what it was. So I said hello, and the guy said, hello, we're doing a little survey. Would you mind answering some questions? I said, well, if it's really brief, because I just was on a meeting online and I have something else I have to do. He said, yeah, it's really just one question. According to you, with all the troubles in the world, what is the solution? And I said, why are you asking me this question? And he said, well, we're doing a survey. And I said, well, but who are you? Yeah. Doing this survey, because he was there with this woman. And he said, oh, well, we're Jehovah's Witnesses. And I said, oh. Témoins de Jéhovah in French. I don't know what you say in Portuguese, but...
Témoins de Jéhovah.
Right. And I said, oh, hello, I'm a Zen master. And he said, oh, hello. And he said, so what do you think about that question? And I said, well, you know, it's really simple in my experience. If each of us just woke up to who we truly are, then we would see that I and the other are not different, and we wouldn't hurt each other anymore. And it would all be great. I'm like really summarizing. Because I'm standing here in my window and he's in the street, right? And the woman was not saying a word. She was just like looking at me. And he said, yeah, but don't you think there's something, don't you think we need to ask for something higher than us, outside of us? Or no, he said, have you heard of something outside of us and or higher than us? That don't you think that would be the solution? And I said, no, from the Buddhist point of view, our experience is that there is nothing outside of ourselves. So there is no higher authority. And he said, I've heard that too. And I said, you know, it's really the same message as Christ. But don't you think? And I said, well, no, I don't. And I said, you know, you could ring the door next door. You could ring the bell next door, which is the Zen Center, and see what they say. And he said, okay. And I said, but they'll give you the same answer as me because they're also a Zen Center. Oh, okay. Right. And then he wanted to like keep going on, and I said, thank you, I'm really happy that you're doing this. If you could, you know, it's good that you're asking people this question. Have a good day. And he went on. And, you know, that's where the liberation is. Our liberation is really that, when we see who we truly are, and when we see when we wake up to the oneness, as we say, the unity, which is true, was also Christ's message. Although, you know, it's become caught up in this doctrine where it's this higher authority, God, who, you know, can solve all the problems. Or, I won't go into it, but on our WhatsApp group there's been this ongoing conversation among a few people about whether there is God or not, and if there is God, there can't be God because then there wouldn't be evil and all this kind of stuff. From the Buddhist point of view, you know, God is everything, something, let's just say. I'm not going to get into that. I wanted to stick with the liberation aspect of waking up to who we truly are, seeing who we truly are. And then, so I'm thinking about that, the Liberation Day, and sheer coincidence, although it's probably not a coincidence, today we decided to chant the verse of the Kesa. Which the first line is, vast is the robe of liberation. So, you know, we can say maybe there aren't coincidences. Betty and I had talked about this before, about introducing this, without really thinking that it was this day or anything. So I thought, maybe I should talk about this verse, because we don't usually sing it. And there is an alternative, as with all of these chants, there is an alternative version. One that I have found is an alternative to it, which I quite like, actually. So the version that we chant is, vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. I wear the Tathagata teaching, saving all sentient beings. This one, you know, I've chanted this millions, hundreds, and thousands of times, as others have. Betty, Duffing, probably. You know, I just know it by heart. We have it on the back of, not this one, but on your rakusus, you have it written there. We call it the verse of the Kesa. Okay, so when we think, oh, well, the Kesa is the robe of liberation. The kesa is the robe that the monks wear, that the Buddha originally wore. And our rakusus are a mini version of that. Because the story goes that at one point in the 9th century in China, there was an emperor who didn't like Buddhism, and they were persecuted, Buddhists were persecuted. And so the Chinese, at the time, the Chinese Buddhists, moved into communal agrarian communities, like big farms, where they lived together so they could practice together. But it just from the outside, it looked like they were just farmers. And because they couldn't wear the garment outside, they would be identified as Buddhists, they made a small version that they could wear under their clothing, so no one would see it. Kind of like the Jewish, what's that called, that Orthodox Jews wear under their clothing, and you can sometimes see the threads hanging down. Do you know what that's called? What, talit, is that what it is? Something like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can see the white fringes strings hanging down. What?
Fringes, the fringes.
Right. Yeah. It's under their clothing. So the rakusu was hidden under their clothing. Well, we maintained it, and as lay people, meaning we're not monastic, that's what we wear. And this is like a mini kesa. However, can we see the kesa as not like, if we can see it as the universe is the kesa, you know, if we look at it from the absolute point of view, there is no piece of clothing that's kesa and another piece that isn't. So every morning when you get dressed and you put on whatever it is that you're putting on your kesa. When you take off your clothes and go in the shower, that your skin is your kesa. You know, if we really look into it, and with the alternative version of this chant, I will kind of unfold that. So the alternative version of this, I'll get into it. So the alternative version is, vast and wondrous is the robe of liberation. So they add this word wondrous. Formless yet embracing every treasure. They add this different version. Instead of benefaction, it's treasure, embracing. Next line. I wish to unfold the Buddha's teaching. Instead of, I wear the Buddha's teachings, the Tathagata's teachings, that I may help all living beings, which gets us away from this word that, you know, that I don't like, saving, okay? So it's vast and wondrous is the robe of liberation, formless yet embracing every treasure, I wish to unfold the Buddha's teachings, that I may help all living beings. So why is that different, and how can we see this? So, you know, I made some notes about this so I wouldn't forget, but I don't know where this originally came from. I found it on the site from the Shasta Abbey Zen Center in California, which is where Leonard Cohen practiced. It's known for that, I think, is where it was. But anyway, it's another different Zen lineage from ours. They had no explanation of why they translated it like that. None of these notes that I've made are. It's just that's what's in their sutra book, right? So if we look at it. So vast is the robe of liberation, or vast and wondrous is the robe of liberation. So this word wondrous, that adds the sense of wonder and awe, which is really at the heart of our practice, not knowing, right? Marveling at the universe, opening, cultivating a deeper opening the, instead of I know this is what the robe of liberation is, it's wondrous. And that it opens our idea of what the robe of liberation is. It's not just this thing that is wondrous, or that special robe that's wondrous, but the entire universe is wondrous. The robe of liberation is vast, as we say. It's so vast, it's maha. You know, that's the word from the, that we use in Buddhism. So vast that it's everything is the robe of liberation. The universe is the robe of liberation. We are the robe of liberation. And this wondrous, this helps us to, you know, that points to like not knowing, marveling, opening to it, something like that, deepening our understanding of it and cultivating a realization of it. Instead of just vast is the robe of liberation, which is in very succinct, very direct, but it's almost just like a statement that doesn't really lead us to it questioning what it means or opening it to anything. It's like, it's a fact. Vast is a realm of liberation, something. You know, these are fine. The original version, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying this other translation, for me, really spoke. It opened it in a different way. So the next line, formless yet embracing every treasure. So when we say formless, we're talking about the absolute, in which there is no dualities, no differences, no forms. There's no love and hate. There's no difference. There's no you and I. Formless is absent, right? And when we say it's a formless field of benefaction, well, that's kind of mysterious. So what, there's this formless thing, but it's a field. It's a thing. And what's this benefaction, right? Of course, benefaction means, you know, goodness, well-being. It could entail love, compassion, maybe. But this formless field is kind of what? Vague, right? It's formless. So in this translation, formless yet embracing every treasure. So it's formless, it's the absolute, yet it's embracing the 10,000 things. The relative world. All the differences, but this is the absolute and the difference together. Embracing, right? Holding. When we embrace, when we hold someone or we hold something, it's embracing each and all the 10,000 things, every treasure. So all the 10,000 things are a treasure. And they're being embraced in this formless field. So embracing is a little more, maybe less lofty than benefaction. Benefaction is kind of not specific. In French, we would say un peu recherché, you know. Whereas embracing, embrasser in French, or how do you say it? Embrace in Portuguese? Same thing, yeah. It's a little more concrete, you know, it's a little more. We can understand that. We can feel that, maybe. And more than understand, maybe, we can feel it. We feel what it is to embrace and what it is to be embraced. And here we have the formless. It's as if the formless is manifesting as the 10,000 things, which we know when we say, you know, when we talk about moon or the true nature of things. It's one nature, that's oneness, but it manifests in each of these different forms, each of these different ways. You know, the flowers, it's just like doing kinin, amazing, all these manifestations, those flowers, you know. And for us coming from early spring in France, we don't have all this manifestation. We don't have these flowers, except unless you go to a flower shop. And it's not like this, right? Maybe in the south, you might have in the south of France. But in any case, we can marvel at these, you know, this formless nature manifesting as all of this, and embrace it. So when we say, you know, this robe of liberation is formless, yet it's embracing all of it, the whole thing. It's loving it, it's holding it, welcoming it, maybe something like that. Everything. So we're still talking about the robe of liberation, right? That is this formless, yet embracing every treasure. So as we can see, you know, we're not actually talking about a piece of cloth. If it's embracing, although it is, right? It is. This embraces every treasure. But so does this. So then we come to the next line in the traditional version. I wear the Tathagasa teaching. So sometimes, you know, I don't know what's written on your rakusus, but I have the idea that, did I write on that singular Tathagata teaching?
Yes.
Or teachings?
Do you remember?
Plural, okay. But the Tathagata teaching. The Tathagata teaching, yes.
No.
Well, there's no apostrophe. And on yours, what did it say?
There's another.
A different verse. Different. It's a different one. Yeah. Okay. On yours. I don't even have yours either. Because I copied from mine when I wrote on yours. So clearly, Gena Roshi wrote whatever is written in there. Except on mine, she misspelled Tathagata. So the seven of us who received Jupai from her first had rakusus that Tathagata is misspelled.
There's an H missing?
So it's a sing. It's not the Tathagata doesn't possess the teaching, and the teaching is singular on this version that we have in our rakusus. However, in a lot of the versions, it says Tathagata possessive, apostrophe S, with an S, teachings, plural teachings, right? So the teachings belong to the Tathagata, right? In this alternative version, they do too. I wish to unfold the Buddha's teachings. So this too is interesting. So instead of wearing them, I wish to unfold them. Because when we say wear them, this is not the intention, but it can be seen as like a uniform, you know, something exclusive. I have it, you know, I'm wearing it and the others aren't. I think the intention is more like, you know, I'm so one with the teachings that I am wearing it.
Embodied?
Right, yeah, something like that. I think that's what the intention of the wearing is. But it's also referring to concretely, we're putting on our kesa at that moment. When that chant is when monks in a monastery don't wear their kesa when they arrive to sit in their first sitting. And so they, after the end of the first sitting, then they put on their kesa of the first block of sitting, they put on their kesa. And there's a whole ritual involved with it while they're chanting. They put it on their head, the kesa, and they chant the verse. And then they stand up and put on their kesa. And we used to do in Dhamma, we did the same thing. We didn't wear our rakusus when we arrived in the zendo in the morning. And then after that period, we took the rakusu and put it on our heads. Or maybe we took it off and put it on our heads, I don't remember. In any case, we put it on our heads. You must remember this. Yeah. You don't remember it?
No, I was never there.
Really, in those days, okay. And so we put it on our heads and chanted it, and then put it on. as I should have told you when you received Jukai, before you put on your rakusu, you're supposed to do that, touch it to your head, here, and recite the verse to yourself, even if it's just like symbolically. So you touch it to your forehead, reciting the verse, and then you put it on.
What do we recite?
The verse that's on your... Okay. Yeah. But, you know, because I'm not so good with forms all the time, I may have forgotten to have told you that.
On top of the head.
Right. That's what you're supposed to do. Okay. But then in Dana, Roshi abandoned the putting it on the heads business. I don't know why, and I don't know when, but you don't remember it, so...
No.
I don't know. It was probably a long, long time ago.
No, but I was at Salt Lake when you did your Jukai.
Okay. Oh, so that's why, yeah.
That's why I kind of...
But Chula remembers it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Roshi abandoned that, and I never did this verse here, so we didn't do it either. In any case, that's why it says I wear it, you know, it's because it's really about putting it on. But the intention is, you know, not that I'm this special monk and I'm putting on this robe. It's that, you know, I am a manifestation of the teachings and I'm putting on this robe or something like that. However, in this version of I wish to unfold the Buddha's teachings, the wish is like, you know, our vow or our intention or our aspiration. Instead of wearing, you know, it's I wish. So this is what I'm aspiring to. So I aspire to unfold the teachings, which is ongoing. Unfolding is endless, you know. And by doing so, you know, the Buddha's teachings, so I like that it's plural in this sense, that because everything is a teaching in that sense. The Buddha, you know, just this. Everything is just this. Everything is Buddha. And so that is a teaching that's constantly unfolding. Something like that. That's how I understand it. And the, you know, the universe is the teaching. And it's pouring forth all the time. And I wish to unfold that. I wish to experience that. I wish to... share that. I wish to embody that. Unfolding endlessly, something like that. And then the last line, the traditional version, is saving all sentient beings. And it comes back to, you know, our sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them, which, as we know, you know, that's controversial, that word save. So this translation is, so I wish to unfold the Buddha's teachings that I may help all living beings. So by unfolding and embodying the teachings, may I help all living beings. They didn't say sentient, maybe because sentient is a little more elaborate or something. Living is much more concrete. You know, maybe we could even take out the living or the sentient being and just being, and just beings, all beings. You know, what do we know if they're sentient or not?
Yeah. Exactly.
But that's the traditional translation of it. In Japanese, who knows what it is? In Chinese before that, so I don't know. But so this one, you know, there's this help versus save. And there's the living versus sentient, but then I'm not sure about even one or the other. They're not so different. Because actually, you know, this whole vast and wondrous robe of liberation is alive. Everything is alive, you know. Thing from The Sound of Music, the hills are alive with The Sound of Music. Right? The hills are alive. or Jesus going into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, you know, you can quiet me, you can silence me, but the rocks and trees will keep saying it. So everything is alive. It's all the vast world of liberation. So help, help can also be a bit charged. You know, when we say help, it's as if someone is weak and needs our help or something. But if we can just stay with it as be of service to, maybe. You know? May I serve all beings. What is that thing up there, that mural say up there outside when you're walking Kinin about serving? Nobody else saw it? There's like the world that is sad and poor.
Yeah, and the other world.
And it says,
it's the earth.
Live to serve, no, or something like that?
I came to serve.
What?
I came to serve.
I came to serve, and what's after it? What is dar? D-A-R.
Then give. Give.
To give life.
And give life. I came to serve and give life. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's this figure who, I don't know if it's Jesus, but it's washing the feet of this hurt world, this tired world. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe kind of in that spirit, you know, may I serve. We don't know what the serving is, but if we come to it from this vast and wondrous robe of liberation, well, whatever needs to be done, I can do. And if I'm embracing this formless, you know, universe of all things, oneness, which embraces every treasure, so every person we meet, every object, everything, every moment, the 10,000 things, may I, you know, unfold the teachings so that I can be of service to that. So this says, may I help? It could be that I may serve all beings, you know, why not? I'm thinking, I don't know if Shasta Abbey is where Leonard Cohen was. I think he was at Mount Baldy, but I don't know if it's the same place anyway. So I don't know who the teacher was at Shasta Abbey, why they translated it that way. I don't know, but... So, you know, if we can look at... if we can see the entire universe as the robe of liberation, then we can chant this verse anytime, anywhere. Whatever it is, whatever we're putting on. You know, if we're in the kitchen putting on the apron, that's the robe of liberation. If we go to our office job, that's the robe of liberation. If we put on our pajamas and go to sleep, that's the robe of liberation. it's all the robe of liberation. This different translation, I don't know how new it is, but it kind of takes us away from this aspect of it's this thing that's special and exclusive and it's my uniform or I'm identified with it. I'm not saying that any of us thought that, but it's a possibility to become identified with it in that way. And so actually... You know, when we chant this, you know, we're actually the reason I put it as a spiral. So on your rakasus, it's written in a spiral. It's not like mine, but I wrote it in a spiral like this because it's circular. So you know, if we unfold the teachings and help all beings, then we are embodying the vast and wondrous robe of liberation, which embraces all every treasure and comes back to the wish. It's this spiral. It's this endless, like endless vow, we sometimes say. The beginning and the end are hard to find. And when you did your jukais, you also filled in the chart, which has all the names, and that too is a spiral. It's not literally a spiral, a circle, but you know, it starts with Shakyamuni Buddha, it goes throughout the entire lineage, 83 generations to me, And then the line goes, oh, to you, you come after me on that chart, and then the line goes back up. No, it's a circle. It's like we are all those patriarchs and they are me. We are all those ancestors and they are me. It's very powerful, that. That is our liberation too. I am not like this isolated being who has to then take on the whole thing. You know, I am all of those ancestors. There's an interesting story that just happened recently with Geno Roshi and some other teachers. We were reviewing some documents and we came upon, I don't even remember how, but we discovered that in our lineage, at least from what we could find in our lineage documents, in the lineage that we chant in service, in the charts you filled out, on our transmission documents, there is a missing ancestor. And when we discovered this, I can't even remember how we discovered it, but there was a moment of panic. We were all sitting in Geno Roshi's living room going over these documents together. And so we like searched on the internet, of course, and we found that it was also missing at Daigo Lori's, in his sutra book. He's at Zen Mountain Monastery, and he's like kind of, you know, the epitome of etiquette. We couldn't find Tenke's sutra books online, so we don't know. Bernie's, like we saw it from Eve's transmissions or lineage charts or something, was missing. It was missing on Geno Roshi's, so clearly it was missing, and Maizumi Roshi is the one who supervised Geno Roshi's transmission, so it was clearly missing from Genpo's stuff, so it was clearly missing from Bernie's stuff. I'm just looking at the lineage closely around us.
That's why it's such a mess in the world.
Exactly. And then we went to Chosen, who is another of Bernie's successors, and in her sutra book it's there, the missing patriarch. What we're saying is the missing patriarch. We couldn't figure this out, you know. And we were adding up, you know, the 84 generations, you know, the number of generations, and it worked. So we were like, why is it, how can we be missing something if the count comes out right for the number of generations? And so we wrote to the president of White Plum, of our entire huge umbrella of lineage, and he responded like the next day, and he said, yes, I have a sutra book from the early 80s at the Zen Center of Los Angeles, which was Maizumi Roshi's center, in which that name is not listed. But sometime in the 90s, after he doesn't remember if it was after Maizumi Roshi died or before, we revised a lot of sutras and things, and in that sutra book, the patriarch is there. So, we don't know why. We don't know why it was eliminated, why it was put back in. The mystery of then, well then, that changes the count of the generations is, they don't count Shakyamuni Buddha as a generation. Mm-hmm. They start with the following, with Mayakashapa, which to me, I'm not so sure. So then I think it should be counted differently, because we would say, you know, an immigrant, you know, is a first generation and their child is the second generation. But then we might say the immigrant's child is the first generation in the new country. So whatever. I'm saying this because, so then, the story is that at Dana, they have modified their sutra books to include this new patriarch. And they've modified the lineage chart for people who now do Jukai. They will include that. And I was talking to Betty about this yesterday, and I said, well, I haven't modified this. You know. And she said, well, you know, After we've chanted the lineage, we say, and to all ancestors whose names have been forgotten or left unsaid. So this guy is included in that. At some point, I might modify it, but it means changing everything. All the sutra books and all that stuff. And I don't know, for the next Jukai people, maybe we'll change it. So,
do you know the story of this Patrick Samson?
I don't.
You know that this is a man, not a woman.
Well, because all of the people on there are men, as far as we know. Although there is some historians who say Bodhidharma's teacher was a woman in India. Anuttara, I think it is. So there is some suspicion that some of them might be women, but they were left, they were considered in for the history of men. However, didn't you tell me that Geno Roshi had some document in which the name was written?
I didn't.
You didn't tell me that? Someone told me that just recently. Who told me that?
Maybe you are.
Frank, maybe.
Frank?
Maybe Frank, yeah. Anyway, she had some document from when she was a student, or I don't know, where it said something about this patriarch. In any case, it's important for us to acknowledge the, you know, the 10,000 things, the 10,000 people, the individual manifestations and embodiments, and yet it's all one. So it's important not to forget, not to overlook. But if we have, like we chant in the morning, you know, if I have caused suffering, if I have said something, if I have thought something, if I have done something that has caused suffering, it's inevitable, we have. We acknowledge it. And we, and the word in English is great, atone, we become one with it. We own it completely. Okay, this is it. So when we make that chant and we've left this name out, we acknowledge that there are names that have been left out. I am curious to know why it was taken out initially. I doubt it was overlooked. I don't think Maizumi Roshi would have just overlooked it, but...
He didn't like the guy.
Who knows? You know, who knows? And maybe they added it after Maizumi Roshi died. I don't know. I'm curious to know why it was left out.
Which number is he?
It's like 71 or something.
That's early. I mean, recent.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like 14, you know, 13 generations. So, I don't know. I think it's 71. Also, you know, that there's different ways of chanting, there's different versions of things. But what is the point, you know, kind of like Betty said this morning, when you chant, give yourself to it entirely. So all this time, you know, we chant one way, and then, or like, you know, Betty said in French, we chant one way, and then we chant it differently in English, or we have to remember the words, but the important thing is just to give it to ourselves entirely. Like Bernie Glassman says, the Heart Sutra, if you just chant that first syllable entirely, you've said it all. So, Avalokiteshvara. That's in French, right? No, it's the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. Yeah. So in French it would be le, entirely, right?
That sounded as good.
What? Doesn't sound as good, yeah. But that too is a judgment, right? You know, we have this idea of this sounds better than that or something. Mm-hmm. The thing is to be entirely it, and that's what it is to, you know, embody it, this robe of liberation. You are the robe of liberation. At the same time, you know, there are rakusus. This is a different color than the one, than that, and that, and I have to accept that. You know, initially I didn't want to. Like my purple rakusu, which was not as bright as that, it was almost black. And I was so happy because then it looked like I didn't really have a purple rakusu. But that's not really being one with it, right? Then I had to become that, I had to embody that. And we all are wearing the robe of liberation. We all are wearing it and we all are it. So, and the kesa too, you know, this, I read somewhere recently that, I don't remember where again, but that in Japan, lay people too can wear kesas. They can make a kesa. And there are some lineages, even in the West, in Sylvain in the Drôme was telling me that this is a French woman who practices with us sometimes and is in a different lineage, told me that in her lineage they all can make cases and they can choose their own color. It's kind of a different, you know, the gamut of color is kind of not super bright, you know, kind of quiet color, and they have to tell the teacher this is the color the teacher say it's okay, but then they all can make a kesa and wear it, and they mostly meet online, maybe once or twice a year they get together, kind of like some of us here, and when they're sitting online they wear their kesas over their normal clothing. So they don't have robes that they put on online, but they just put their kesa on, like we would put our rakusu, right, online. So what is the spirit of it? What is the point? Is it to have some, you know, amazing, perfect, beautiful color? I have this color of a kesa, and you have that, or you don't, and to be special or something, is that what it's about? No. It's to be it, to embody the teaching, to embrace the 10,000 things. And if we stick to only the absolute view, where everything is the robe of the cape of liberation, then well, why do I have to do anything special? Why do I have to have a rakusu? I came from this place, so I can tell you from experience that I saw no purpose whatsoever to have a rakusu. And I thought it was kind of silly, even, that people would make a rakusu and walk around with a special thing when, you know, I embodied the teaching already, so why did I need a rakusu? You know, this was my deluded perspective. I own it. I was a young green Zen student. And then...
Oh, there's some wisdom in that, huh?
Well, there is, but I was kind of stuck there. Yeah. And fortunately, I had a good teacher who saw that I was stuck there and helped me to really wear the robe of liberation, you know. There is, too, like you say, Betty, there is some wisdom in that some people are wearing it just because they become part of the club or something, you know. Not necessarily in our Sangha or in Dana, but in sometimes it is that for people.
Or so even maybe there's some wisdom in that.
In what?
In just wearing it because...
That's right, you know, I mean, absolutely. We can find wisdom in, if we look at it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. However, if we become stuck in the, like I was stuck in, I don't need that, then we miss the importance of ritual, the importance of this is who I am right now, this is what this is, we put this on when we go online and we're sitting together, this is what we're doing together. This is a reminder of what this practice is. This is honoring this space that I'm in that is not the same space as when I'm you know, on the couch watching Severance. I don't know if anyone else watched that series, Severance.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a really good Buddhist reading of it.
That's called Severance.
Severance, it's called. Anyway.
What? Look it up.
What? Yeah, look it up. If you start watching, it's hard to stop.
Need
but
to be Apple.
It's on Apple TV.
Right.
Yeah. But if you have Kennel Plus, yeah, it's included. If you have Kennel
Plus. And just.
Yeah, it's basically people are separating themselves into two. They choose to have one life when they're at work and one life when they're not at work. It's separate. Very interesting view of separation, duality, oneness, who we truly are, all this. So why did I say that? Oh yes, so if we don't take into account the differences, then we don't even need a rock soap, right? And that for me what changed was at some point I had this realization that I was already at this step where, I wish to unfold the Buddha's teachings that I can help so that I'm willing to do anything to serve. I had this realization of this. And so then it became, well then, why not make a rakku suit and wear a rakku suit? Why not do it? I'm focusing on why do it. Well, if I'm open and desiring to do anything, why not do that, And then when I did it and did the ritual, as you all know who have done it, it changes something for you when you take that ritual. You are saying, I am this enlightened way, whether I know it or not. I am this. These vows are not something outside of me that I need to live up to. This is who I am, and this is how my best self or my enlightened self lives. This is how I want to be, and this is who I am. I aspire to this, and it's because it's who I already am, something like that. And the ritual is a very important moment to do that. It takes us, like I always say, ritual takes us out of our personal stuff. So my attachment to, I'm going to chant this way, or I don't need to wear rakusu. Or I don't want to do this in Oryoki. It takes us out of that personal stuff and we join in this impersonal space of wholeness and oneness. We all chant the same thing, the same way. We all do the same thing in Oryoki. We're supposed to all have the same rakusu. I made a mistake in the early people because I said they could beg for cloth like Bernie does and make it from that. But then it became this kind of ascetic thing where the rakusus look really cool and they're different than the black rakusus. So we don't do that anymore. Everybody has black rakusus now. I'm not saying that they were intending to make special rakusus, but they look different. And the cloth is, although it has meaning for them, those pieces of cloth have meaning. That was part of what it was supposed to be. Like, Seus is from a master whose robe she had. Yeah.
He's from Roshi. He's from my mother. He's from Anna.
So that has meaning, But it does look different than our black rakusus. And what they used to do is, Burmese people used to do is like dye the fabric. So they could get any color fabric they wanted, but then they had to dye it black. And of course, depending on the color of the fabric, the black looks different. So it's still not uniform, but it's still intentional. So the ritual is important. So it's interesting to chant that vow, that verse, today. It's different. It gives a different feeling to the end of that morning block and leads us into Oryoki. And when, so when we chant it tomorrow, you might think of this other translation and just see how that, the original version that we use is, has everything in it that the different version has. It's just said differently. Different words. I see the server looking at his watch. Are we almost...
We have a
what?
Quarter past one.
Okay.
I think the new version gives us a little more... a little more to work with. In
exactly.
And because I liked also very much the old version because it's so mysterious. But it took me 20 years to kind of, or to kind of get a little bit like the taste of what it actually meant. First,
exactly.
What is it? And I think this one is more.
It's more poetic.
It's more poetic. There's yeah. more that you can.
More accessible.
It's more accessible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the original version is also very poetic.
Yeah, it's also great.
But mysterious, more mysterious,
yeah, more
like
mysterious.
You say.
Yeah. I just put it on music, huh? The original version. I just made a song out of it.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
You know, so tomorrow, you or Sunday, you will see in our slide presentation, the music is from Tammy, who is a Zen teacher in the Netherlands, who put a number of sutras to
also
music.
To music, yeah.
So you will hear that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Sunday.
In the French version, it, sans forme, it's a chant de bienfait. I thought it was a chanting of benefit. And I realized when I hear the English version that it was filled. But I thought it was chanting, and I thought it was that poetic way, for the music, the vibration of the
interesting. It could be as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Just because in French, chant, field and singing is the same.
Yeah. It sounds the
sounds,
same.
It sounds the same writing, but it's the same.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
And it is also, you know. Otherwise, in French, it's the same, right? Sans forme, c'est toujours bien fait. Je porte. Je sauve.
Je sauve tous les êtres vivants.
Right. Yeah. Well, you'll have to sing it for us. I don't know if you want to do that now or in a moment.
You want to?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry to put you on the spot. But
no, it's okay.
Vaste est la robe de libération, sans forme et ce chant de bienfaire. Je porte l'enseignement du Tathagata. Je sauve tous les êtres vivants, tous les êtres vivants. Je sauve tous les êtres vivants, tous les êtres vivants, tous les êtres vivants.
It's like with the guitar accompaniment, and it's like a little improvised the last part. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Did you sing that at Stan's transmission?
Yeah. I did.
Any question? When we say all beings, I'm struggling with what do I want, what do I need. Paying attention to me, so are we ourselves included in this all time?
Yep. Right. Yep. And sometimes that's the hardest one to include.
Yes.
Yep. All means everybody.
You too.
questions? Or?
No, just sharing. I to me, it's very special. I'm very happy to be here in order to share and this verse that is here. It's my mantra since Shukai, 10 years that I did. And my mind, you know, is always complaining about being myself, you know, everything. So I replace it. So I'm always, you know, saying this, and especially when I go to sleep and when I wake up, you know, when I have to fall asleep or when I have to do something really concrete. It's something that I, so it was a new experience for me to chant today.
Oh yeah.
And it was amazing. And, because I sometimes I could feel myself included in that beingness, you know. And it was a new experience for me.
Nice. Yeah, very different to chant it with other people out loud than to. Yes.
And I was not afraid of hearing my voice because I don't. And usually I don't like to hear my voice, but I heard it this morning. And it was very special.
Oh yeah. Yeah, not liking our voice is kind of like not including ourselves in the all.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people don't like their voice. Mm.
Really?
I think, yeah. And even if I listen to myself in the recording. Mm.
No, that's true, yeah.
No, it's very difficult to really say, okay, that's me.
And it's true that our voice sounds different when we hear it.
Mm. Yeah.
Recorded.
Than in our own head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's almost like it's someone else.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we become identified with our voice just like we become identified with our image, with ourself, our idea of who we are. And this robe of liberation is... Yep, there too. Help us become free from that. Just like your country became free. So I guess we can stop there unless anyone has something you want to add. It's probably time anyway, right?
5 minutes.
We can stop there, and if the food is not ready, we can do a fast communion. First, we will chant the four vows, though.